Just a couple of things that are in the works here at the church that will be coming up in the not too distant future. I've been talking with Brother Damon and about getting some dates nailed down for him to come in. And he's supposed to be getting back with me this week. He said him and Tammy were looking at the calendar, seeing what they could do. I'm hoping mid-September time frame is what I'm hoping for. If we have to roll it to October, we will. They've got revivals beginning of September and the end of September, but I'm hoping maybe mid-September. I want to do it sooner than later. What I'm thinking is him coming in on a Saturday night and then a Sunday morning and doing that. Definitely when we get him lined up, want you guys to come, blow your mind. Just a really, really anointed man of God that we're in covenant with. And so he hadn't been here in years and years. A lot of people go up to, he's in South Carolina, go up to his revivals and everything. But anyway, that is in the works. So I'll let you know just as soon as we get a date nailed down so you can work your schedule around that. You don't want to miss that. You want to, whatever you've got, schedule when he's coming, cancel it if it's at all possible, and just, you know, appropriate the time to be here. So that'll be coming up quickly. And also one thing that we're planning on doing, the other night we had FCA at the house, and it was just a really cool evening, a real good venue for it. The you know, just outside, you know, had a light strung up and a generator, and the kids were over and they led worship, and it was really, really good. Just bless my heart to sit here or to be there and watch the, you know, these football players down there, Brett, that's going to be knocking heads on Friday night, and they're down there with their hands lifted up and then praying together when it's over and all of that stuff. And so it was just a real good, powerful evening. And Sonny actually sent over an email to me and Lori, or a text or something, and she said, we, and James and I have been talking about this for a long time, off and on, but she said, that was such a cool venue for that. She said, we need to do that down here one night. And so we're going to, in the process, when it cools off a little bit, I'm thinking once again September, early October time frame, is us having a worship night down here under the stars. And we've got a couple of different things that we're kicking around, and one of them is down around the little big man area. But another one is, and as soon as I get some high pressure, I'm going to get this hay cut. Right down there, if you'll notice the way the land falls down and goes down into the corner down there, is a, me and James have talked about, a perfect amphitheater. And so what we were thinking maybe is build a little stage down there. Big enough to handle, you know, you can do something half that size, real easy, real inexpensive, build a stage that we can leave tucked up back into the woods, and then you've got that whole sloping hillside where we can come in and just throw out blankets and just, you know, come out that evening and just have an evening of worship under the stars. I think it'd be an awesome setting. So we're definitely going to do that. Y'all can hold me to that. We're going to do that this end of summer, early fall, and then we'll have Brother Damon coming. So just a couple cool things we've got in the works here just to help continue to fan the flame and facilitate what God's doing right now. And so if you will, go ahead and turn in your Bible to Revelation 22. Revelation 22. I want to continue in the vein that we've been in the last couple of weeks, as we've been talking about. It started out of John 12 and talking about relational life, and how everything in life is about us connecting with other people and doing life together. Obviously, it starts with our family, it starts with our spouse and our children, but then it's got to extend. And the whole picture of John 12, the supper at Bethany, I think you guys were here when we were talking about that two or three Wednesday nights ago. And we looked at the relationships that were represented at the table and all that. And then we came over to Ezekiel 47, and I talked about Ezekiel 47 this past Sunday and the Wednesday night before. And we looked at Ezekiel 47, and I may go over there and we may read some of that. But the thing about Ezekiel 47, it's a vision that God gave Ezekiel, and it was a vision of the river that flows out of the throne room. And this river, as it flows out of the throne room, obviously the significant, one of the main significant things about it is its source. It flows directly from the throne of God, so that means it's pure. That means it's life-giving. That means it is right. And so, you know, just because you get tapped into it, there's some rivers you can't drink out of. There's some rivers you don't even want to bathe in. And all. But this one is pure. This one is right. And the thing about this river that we talked about, a lot of different things, but a couple aspects of it is everything that it touched, it brought life to. And this river represents us. It represents the kingdom. It represents kingdom life. It represents us as children of God. And the main thing about our lives is if we are not impacting the things that we come in contact with, and you fill in the blanks what that is. You know, it can be somebody on your job. It can be somebody at the Blake House. It can be our family. It can be a stranger that we meet. Anybody that we come in contact with, we need to be releasing life into them and into that situation. And me and Lori were on our way to church, and we pulled out of the driveway, and our neighbor right there, we saw a bunch of cars at her house, and there were several cars when we came by, and I'm like, I knew she had pneumonia a couple months ago, and I'm like, man, something ain't right, and I pulled into the driveway, and her daughter was in the front yard, and I said, hey, is Miss Mathis okay? And she just got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And she just broke down and started crying and all that. So me and Lori, we sit there for about 10 minutes and ministered to her and all of that. And said, man, we'll be praying for you and all of this stuff and everything. But if we are not releasing life, then we are of no use. That's bottom line. If this church isn't releasing life, shut the doors. If you're not releasing life in your personal self, you need to check yourself. All right? That's the bottom line, guys, because when we have Christ in us, then we are naturally going to release and impact. And so we've got to come in and we've got to recognize that I am first and foremost a life giver because of the life that's in me. It's not because I'm Superman or anointed or this or this or this, but it's because of the life that's in me. And so when I touch it, I should leave a fingerprint, I should leave an imprint. You know, there are oils that are in our skin that our skin releases, and obviously that's how they get fingerprints and all that. But when we touch something and we come in contact with it, we need to leave the fingerprint of heaven. It ought to be identifiable that something from heaven just touched me. And that's the thing that I love about this river is everything that it touches, it brings life to. We talked last Wednesday night a great deal about the further that the river flows, the bigger it gets. It starts out, it's ankle deep, then it gets knee deep, then it gets waist deep, and then it gets so deep, you just have to swim in it. He said, I couldn't even cross the thing. And we said the thing that makes the river stronger and more powerful and broader reaching are the tributaries that attach themselves to the river, the tributaries that join the river, the tributaries that the river draws to itself. All right? Jesus came in and told his disciples, he said, greater works than these shall you do. Talking about his works. He said, you're going to do greater works than this. And we ask ourselves, is that talking about quantity or quality? Obviously, I don't think I can do any miracle that Jesus didn't do. And I can't trump anything. He raised the dead. He healed the sick. He cast out every demon that he came in contact with. Everything that he came, his imprint touched, it was set in the proper order. It was made right. Okay? I can't improve on that. But one thing that I can do is when Jesus walked on this earth, he was walking in Galilee for 3.5 years. His whole ministry took place within probably a 100-mile radius. You know, from one of the diameter of his ministry is probably 200 miles. And that's all he impacted. He impacted a lot. I mean, he did a great deal of stuff, thousands and thousands. But when you take the broad spectrum of the church today, we have the potential and the mandate to impact millions. He tells us to go out and to touch every nation, all right? So I think when he comes in, he says, greater works than these shall you do. I think he's talking about we're going to do it on a much broader scale. We're supposed to heal a lot more sick. We're supposed to cast out a lot more demons. We're supposed to release life into people. We're supposed to set the captives free on every arena out there. And it's because the river's not ankle deep. It's not any more pure. It's ankle deep. It's not just ankle deep, but it's so deep you can't swim in it now. And it's because I'm not going to have an impact down at Cargill. But Brett will. I'm not going to have an impact over in Dubai. But Grant will. Right now, I'm not having a personal immediate impact on the Philippines other than the fact that I poured into Micah and Jeff for a long time, and they are impacting the Philippines right now. But by the fact that they're over there, they're impacting people. Y'all, everybody gets this. This is not a hard concept. So everybody understands that the further the river goes, the deeper it gets, the bigger it gets. And this is a generational thing, too. This is a generational thing. You know, I've said something the other day. I look up here, and when I on the occasion where Virgil may come, and I see James and Virgil and Noah up here leading worship together, I see three generations. I made reference to Isaac because he's learning to play the guitar now. And I said, when Isaac gets up here and he's helping lead in worship, you're going to have three generations. You're going to have Cindy. You're going to have Sonny. You're going to have Isaac. If Jeremy's playing the bass, you've got three generations that are standing on a stage. That is a deep river, okay? That thing's deeper than just the fact that, you know, little old dad got saved when he's 16. That's awesome. But when you start piling generation upon generation upon generation. I love when the song Be Enthroned, and it's such a great anthem. And Jeremy Riddle comes in and he says, be enthroned upon the praises of 1,000 generations. And think about the magnitude of that. When we come in and it's not just the fact that this little company of believers or this group of guys that gathers together on Wednesday night. And that's powerful and that's exciting. But we are part of a tapestry that is generation after generation after generation. The word in Hebrews says, for you are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. And that's just not this, but this is a heavenly throng. And that's a group of people and a company of people that have chased after God since Abraham. And then walked in the new covenant since the apostles and the New Testament church. And the generations that were all this. Part of Bill Johnson's legacy I love is he says, I'm a sixth generation pastor. He said, when we go to family reunions and we have a family reunion, there are over 100 missionaries that show up at our family reunion. Over 100 missionaries show up at our family reunion. That's a family reunion. You're going to get preached to at that family reunion. But it's just such a generational legacy on that. And that's part of the depth of the river. That's part of the volume of the river. Y'all heard me talk about surfing down in New Zealand and just getting just totally destroyed down there because of the magnitude of the waves. And it wasn't the height of them, but it was the depth of them. They were so deep and so powerful that when you got caught in one, it was just a churning thing. But that's what our generational faith does. That's what our generational faith does. And Caroline, and I don't know where she picked up on this, but she prays for our neighbor, Miss Mathis, even before when she just knew she was sick and before she had cancer. And she'll pray for Miss Mathis every night. And we told Liam, we said, our 2.5-year-old granddaughter prays for your mama every night. And of course, man, she's just crying and all that stuff. There's power in generational stuff, guys. There's power in that. And you may be the first one in your family that served God and you don't really feel the total magnitude of it. You know, I'm second generation. Grant's third generation. My grandchildren are fourth generation. And just within a span of 50 years, we've got four generations of people. Within a 50-year span, four generations of people that are saying yes to God. And that's powerful right there, all right? So that's the depth and the power of the river. And so we look in this in Ezekiel 47, and we see Ezekiel walking down the river, and he sees it getting deeper, and he sees it getting stronger. He sees it getting farther reaching, and then he stops, and they begin to turn back, and the angel of the Lord, I don't know if it was a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ, if it was just an angel or what it was. It might have been Michael or Gabriel or whoever. It might have just been a servant angel. But when he turns around and he comes back, he said, do you see what you're looking at? Do you recognize what you're looking at? He said right here, have you been watching, son of man? And it says, then he led me back along the riverbank. And he said, when I returned, I was surprised by the sight, in verse 7, I was surprised by the sight of many trees growing on both sides of the river. I will say this, the earth responds to the river. When we are in our right form and properly aligned with God, and we come in contact with the earth, it will leave a good mark. All right? Don't come in and say, well, man, I'm just nothing. And we, in our false humility, we'll say, I'm too big of a mess up, and I've failed in this area, and I'm not in a good place right now, and I'm just kind of lukewarm, and da 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 da. Dude, the power isn't in you to start with. The power's not in you to start with. That the Lord, I hope they got it going up there tonight, but she was doing a video, and the video that she's showing on finding your voice, there's a little bear cub, and it's set up in the Pacific Northwest, and we actually saw it while we were at the Bethel Worship Conference out there. Chris Volanton used it to launch his teaching that night, but there's a little bear cub, and it's out there, and it's just wallowing in the sunshine and enjoying all that stuff, and a mountain lion comes up on it. And you see the mountain lion sitting there, and he starts licking his lips, saying, this is going to be my meal. And so the mountain lion starts chasing the bear cub, and the bear cub runs from it, and it gets in the river. It goes out on a limb, and the limb breaks, and it falls in a river. And it's going down the river, and the mountain lion runs down below it, and it gets to a place where it knows the bear cub has got to come out and get out of the river. There's some logs going across it. And so the little bear cub comes out, and it gets up on the riverbank, and the mountain lion pounces over there, and it hits it with its paw, and the bear cub starts bleeding, and it's bleating to start with a little bit, you know, like you know, I'm hurt and I'm fearful and all that stuff. Well, when the bear cub realizes that it's backed up and it can't do anything and all it can do is try to fight, and it starts making out its little, you know, little growl, little roar. And the first sound that it makes is just a little, you know, you can imagine a little small cub just kind of going, rawr, kind of like Mowgli on the Jungle Book. Y'all know when he tries to roar like Baloo and he lets out a little rawr. Well, that's the way this bear cub does. And then all of a sudden, the next roar you hear is just this huge, just mammoth grizzly bear roar. And you're like, because you don't see anything but the little cub there, and all of a sudden the mountain lion pins its ears back and starts backing off, and it tucks its tail, and it runs. And then it pans back to the bear cub, and standing behind the bear cub is its mama, you know, a big 10-foot sow bear on her hind feet, and she is growling and roaring. And so the mountain lion is not afraid of the cub, but what's the mountain lion afraid of? The mama. So the significance in this is when we find our voice, it's not our voice that we're finding, but it's our Father's voice that we're finding. And the power of the river is not in the strength that I'm in it, and all of us wonderful tributaries came in and did this great thing for God, and whoa, I'm helping out God and all that. But as Spirit-filled sons and daughters, we are joining together, and our voice is His voice that's being released in the earth. This isn't the word according to Sid or the word according to Michael. This is thus saith the Lord, and His Spirit is being released. And that's the power of the river, and that's the power that sent that mountain lion running across, you know, three valleys to get out of Dodge. And when we find our voice and realize that I can have a powerful impact because of what's in me. I'm like the psalmist. I look in me and I don't see that much good. I'm jacked up. Even in my saved state, I'm still jacked up. I still got stuff that goes through here. I'm like, where did that come from? That shouldn't be there. I know every one of us could say, amen? I'm not the only one, I don't think. I'm like, man, that's carnal. I'm not saying it's wicked, but I'm saying it's carnal. And I know that the Apostle Paul talks about the good in me is Christ. It's not the Apostle Paul, but it's Christ. And that's the power that's released. So we look and we see this river touching everything, bringing life, the earth responding to the river, the culture responding to the river, humanity responding to the river. And he looks and he sees these trees growing. And this is where I want to really launch out. I know I spent 25 minutes getting there. But this is where I want to launch out in Revelation 22. I ask you the question Sunday morning, are we the river or are we the tree? The answer was obviously yes. I'm the river and I'm the tree. Psalm 3 talks about the tree that's planted by the water. And how strong it is and how mighty it is and how it has deep root. And it says its leaf never withers and it produces fruit. Constantly produces fruit, and its leaf doesn't wither. And what it does is it brings protection, it brings safety, it brings fruit, it brings life. I'm going to take it a step further in Revelation 22. But it provides all of these things. So that's you and that's I. So now let's look in Revelation 22 with all of that introduction. Let's start in verse 1. Everybody there? All right. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. Now this looks like to me that John's seeing the exact same vision that Jesus was seeing. He comes in here and he said there's a pure river of water of what? Life. Two things, words that just jump out at me in that. Number one, it's pure. Number two, it's life. It's clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. As I see that, that it's clear as crystal, it shows me the contrast of Daniel's vision. Y'all remember Daniel's vision, and it's part iron and part clay and all of that stuff, and it's a mixture of humanity and us, and so often we're this muddy mixture of life and the world. The word says to be carnally minded is death, and carnally minded, it does not mean wicked or sinful or anything like that. The word carnal just means natural. That when I'm naturally minded, when I'm just functioning in my natural self and not my spirit man, it says that's death. And what it means is it's not producing any life. And so the carnal man just does not produce life. And I see this, and it's without all of the mud and the confluence of life. And what we do is you could say leaven if you wanted to. What we do is we allow all of the stuff of life to so contaminate us that we stop being pure and clean. When I got saved, all my sins were washed away. The Word says, if any man's found in Christ Jesus, he's a new creature. Old things are passed away, and all things become new. So when God saved me, He redeemed me, He set me free, but He made me positionally right, positionally pure. When we take communion, you know what this is doing? This grape juice, that means I'm partaking of the righteousness of Christ. That's what that is. That's the blood of Jesus. That's the righteousness of Christ. This bread right here, that's His sinless body. That's the holiness of Christ. So I come in and I'm a new creature and I'm partaking of all of this. And so I am clean and I'm pure. And that's what I see in this river flowing out of where? The throne of God and of the Lamb. And then we jump in verse 2. So it's the exact same scene Ezekiel saw, John's seeing here. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, was there the tree of life. Now this is where I want to talk about tonight. The tree. Which bare 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and His servants shall serve Him. And then it goes on, and they'll see His face. His name's going to be on their foreheads. And all of these things that are happening and taking place, that just a beautiful picture of what heaven looks like. Probably one of my favorite, not probably, definitely one of my favorite scriptures in earth and in the Word. And the scripture that I probably pray the most is, "Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." On earth as it is in heaven. If it exists in heaven, it's supposed to exist here. Y'all heard me preach enough against an escapist mentality. This whole bull mess about, oh, just get me out of this wicked and terrible and miserable place. And we have this mindset that when the world finally gets bad enough, God's going to get a bait of it and He's going to come back and rescue His church. The Word says He's coming back for a glorious and a spotless bride. Heaven's going to be awesome, but you know what my job is? To release heaven into the earth. I'm supposed to be a gateway. I'm supposed to be a portal that releases heaven into the earth. And if it's in heaven, it's supposed to be flowing through me. And if I'm this tree over here in Ezekiel 47, I'm supposed to be this tree in chapter 22 that is full of the Spirit of God, that is releasing the life of God. And I look at this tree, and I see some awesome stuff about this. Number one, it's a tree of life. Number two, it bears 12 manner of fruits and yielded her fruit every month. This whole seasonal thing that we've got a mindset of, guys, we use that as such a cop-out, and I think it makes God want to throw up. How many of us have used the excuse? How many of us? I'm throwing daddy here in on this thing. How many of us have come in and said, well, I'm just not in a good season right now. I'm in a bad season. Come on. Haven't we? I've used it. Brett, I've heard you use it. Randy, I've heard you use it. I've heard all my friends use it. We've all used it. I'm in a hard season right now. I came home one day this week and I was just so, golly. It was one of those days at work that was just like, you know, you everywhere you turn, you know, and you get off work and nothing's going right trying to go home and you got like 800 million. I know y'all don't have these same problems. 800 million things waiting on you. You know, I pull up to the farm and I've got these things. I got army worms eating up my pastures and I'm trying to go get the sprayer hooked up and do this and, you know, go to get the sprayer. And dad had took some stuff off the sprayer and, you know, and I'm like, I can't even get no equipment to try to do work. You know, it's one of them days. You know, and then you come in, you're feeling sorry for yourself and all that, you know, and you're about to eat a good meal in an air-conditioned house, and you're like, I just don't even like my life right now. Anybody but me? I'm not enjoying life right now. You know? And we come in with that, and what we're saying is in this season that I'm in, I am unproductive because I am incapable of bearing fruit. Because it's winter, or the summer's too hot, or you fill in the blank. There's never going to be a time when it's not what we think inconvenient. One thing I've learned, I'm 54 and I've had 54 years of busy seasons. Well, probably 50 years of busy seasons in my life. And when I say busy seasons, I'm talking about 12-month seasons. And that's the same for all of us. I'm not unique in that. Every one of us has an insane schedule. Every one of us has crazy demands on our life. Every one of us, you know, it'd be easy right now for Jamie to be like, this stinks. I'm tired. I don't like being married to a coach. Y'all know how many coaches there are in America right now? You know how many wives there are in America right now that are sitting in Jamie White's shoes? She cannot be like Elijah and say, Lord, I'm the only one serving you right now. He's like, dude, I got 7,000 that hadn't bowed a knee to Baal. You know, come on. Come on. And the thing that's awesome about this tree is it bears fruit 12 months a year. I am convinced that oftentimes when we are going through what we feel like the most difficult season in our life is when we can produce the greatest fruit, the most significant fruit, the most impressionable fruit. My mom's got like 20 different apple trees in her yard that I get to cut around with a mower, and it's like an obstacle course and all of that stuff. But when all of these trees are producing apples, it's not that glorious about an apple. I don't say, ooh, there's a good apple, and I'm snatching that. But when it's an inconvenient time, maybe on the fringe, the first ones that came, I was eating them before they were even ripe. You know, they was half green, and I was like, whew, you know, and I said, that ain't bad. My wife's like that with muscadines and scuppernines, you know. She start plucking them things when they big as your thumbnail, they ain't even halfway grown. And she's like, ooh, because she can't. Because in an inconvenient season, something is better. In an inconvenient season, something is more significant. In an inconvenient season, something is more, it's more unique. And I'm convinced that when we go through seasons when the world would think we should be shut down and not producing fruit, that's when we can produce the most effective fruit. So I look at this, and this thing is producing fruit 12 months a year. Here's something that I want to spend a few minutes emphasizing on this, and then I'll open it up. I know I've been preaching, and we haven't been having Bible study, but Jeremy's preaching Sunday, and I'm not getting to preach Sunday, so I'm y'all getting double dose. But here's one thing I want us to notice. It said it was producing 12 different kinds of fruit. 12 different kinds of fruit. Here's where I want to go with this. If we're not careful, if I'm not careful, I'll say me. I won't pick on anybody. I'll say me. If I'm not careful, I will come in and I will look and say, in this season of my life, this is a high priority. And I have to focus on this. So you know what kind of fruit I'm producing? One kind of fruit. Instead of producing 12 kinds of fruit. The big problem that I have in idolatry, we all have issues with idolatry. The big problem that I have in idolatry is I will allow good things to become idolatrous in my life. If I come in and say, I've just got to focus on my family right now and my kids, and it's easy when they're little. My daughters have got, you know, real, real young children and all of that stuff. And it's easy to focus on the fact that, man, I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old or whatever. And I've just got to spend all my time and all my focus on my family and all of that. You know what you're doing when you are solely focusing on that thing? You're making it an idol. It's a good thing. But we can take, our thing is not that the, when the children of Israel made the golden calf, they didn't start out coming in and saying, we're going to make a golden calf and worship Baal. They said, we're going to make a golden calf and worship Yahweh. But they came in and that turned into something that it was an idol and a stumbling block and all of this stuff, and God judged them for it. And I can come in and I have seen people. I have physically seen people in 20-something years of ministry. I've seen people come into church and they're single and they're lonely and they're longing for a companion. And they come in and they're serving God and they're like, oh, I'll let you be my husband because I don't have a physical husband and all of that stuff. And then all of a sudden God will bring a man in their life and then you don't see him at church again. I've seen it time and time again. And you know what? You know what that's doing? That's idolatry. God may have brought that person into your life, but if it takes you away from Him, you see what I'm saying? You're producing a single type of fruit. I'm glad that you've got a strong family unit, but you know what you'll lose in the process? You'll lose the generational thing. Hear me on this. Here's a warning to all of you young parents in here. I'll give this warning to all you guys that's got young kids and you are super busy in their activities. You chase after every activity that comes down through there, every activity that comes down through the pike, and you know what you might do? You might have a great family unit, but you're going to raise a generation of kids that are not passionate about God. Can I be real blunt, real honest with y'all tonight? The teenage kids that I see right now that are the most passionate about God are the teenage kids that are not after every little... I'm just saying. They're not at every event in the school and every event in this. The kids that I see most passionate about God in this house and in other houses, not just this other house, but in this house and in other houses, they're the kids that are not consumed with, I've got to do this and this and this and this, and my life looks so chaotic because I'm at sports 5 nights a week and dance 3 nights a week and school drama 2 nights a week and this 3 nights a week and that 4 nights a week. And the kids that I see that are most passionate about God are kids that are not sucked into that thing. And we say, man, I just want them to be kids and I just want them to love the family unit. And so we're just spending a lot of time and all that stuff. I've seen people through the years, they'll buy a lake lot and they'll go to that lake lot and say, we're just going to have great family time. And you know what it does? It takes them out of church and they may still love Jesus, but they raise a generation of kids that forget who the Lord is. Look at Israel. Somebody come on. I'm just trying to be loving to y'all and help y'all out a little bit. I'm serious. I know it's a hard balance. Man, I applaud y'all right now, Jeremy Crane. I sit back and I see Isaac, and God's rocking Isaac's world, and I love what I see God doing in Isaac's life. And I think one thing that has helped contribute to that is Isaac's not out chasing every little thing 6 nights a week because he's got to be all of this stuff. And it affords him an opportunity where he is not sucked up into the vacuum of whatever that, you fill in the blank on whatever that thing is. And I see him being very passionate. I see him standing down here Sunday morning with tears streaming down his eyes. When I laid hands on him Sunday to pray for him Sunday, his heart was about to beat out of his chest. And I see a God doing a work in him. I saw him up there Saturday night, man, and he was, you know, learning to play the guitar up there and just in a place where it's like, man, here, I'm in love with Jesus right now. I didn't even know he'd been wanting to write songs when we started declaring that stuff over him and Noah. I, I, I prayed over Noah and Isaac Sunday morning. I know you guys were out of town, but I prayed over them Sunday morning, just a release into songwriting and expression, and God bringing them into a place of being worship leaders and all of that stuff, and just a new and deeper thing in Him. I told them Sunday, I said, I pray that God, the greatest influence in your life musically is not Brantley Gilbert, but it's Jeremy Riddle and Chris Quilela. You know, that's what, but I didn't even know that Isaac had been, later on I found out that God's already been stirring in him to write songs. He's already come to Cindy, like, Cindy, will you help me write? And I'm like, yes, God, this is so cool. But I'm just telling you guys, I'm telling you, Damon's fighting this battle with some of his guys up there, and he said, look, man, I know your kid's a stud in sports. And I'm not saying don't play sports. But I'm saying you've got to just be careful. Because what we'll do is we'll produce singular fruit. We will produce singular fruit. We will not produce 12 types of fruit. And I can come in, and I've been guilty of this. I'm not beating anybody. I've been guilty of this. Where my focus, my wife did this for a couple years. She shut down on everybody out there, and she circled the wagons, and she poured into her family. But you know what she was doing? She was producing great fruit in her family. But you know what she was not producing great fruit in? Other arenas. She was producing one kind of fruit. And if we're to be what this tree is, if we're to be what God's called us to be, we better be producing 12 kinds of fruit. Because I cannot afford the luxury of shutting down on you and just pouring into her. I'll use myself here as an example on this. I have many, many different facets to me. That day that I was so frustrated, I told you about I was so frustrated because I couldn't get anything done and all of that stuff and everything. Well, the kids wound up, you know, being over at the house about 45 minutes before dark, an hour before dark, and it just kind of sealed the deal. I wound up swimming in the pool with the kids for 45 minutes, you know. So I'm sitting here and just frustrated. I ain't getting nothing done in life. Well, actually, I got the best thing done in life. They didn't care if the pasture got sprayed. They don't care nothing about no army worm eating up my Bermuda grass. They just cared that Poppy. So with them, you know what I've got to do? I've got to produce fruit in that life. But then I got to turn around right here, and here's my wife. There better be a different type of fruit that's produced right there. 12 types of fruit. There better be a different type of fruit that's produced right here. Then I turn around with a covenant brother. There better be a different type of fruit produced right here. I come in and I've got a group of guys that come in here. And you guys come in here on most Wednesdays. And man, I love you guys. And I love what God's doing in a lot of your lives and all of that stuff. And I feel like, man, I've got a mandate on my life to help facilitate that. I want y'all to come in and say, man, I love Pastor Sid because he loves me and he releases life into me. And so, you know what? That's another facet. Better be producing fruit. It can't be one of these things where it's like, man, I'm just in a bad season right now. I just can't produce no fruit. They desperately need me to. Just like my grandkids desperately need a Poppy that'll get in the pool and play with them too. You see what I'm saying on this? The awesome power in this tree is that it could produce fruit year round without fail. And we have got to learn to get in a place to where we're producing fruit year round without fail on many different facets, many different fronts. I've got to be able to produce fruit for a congregation. You've got to be able to produce fruit for the different people in your life. I drove up today, Brandon, and you were getting out of your vehicle, and I pulled by your car, and your son was getting out on the other side, and I looked, and I just shook my head, and I told Lori, I said, there ain't a dime's worth of difference in Brandon and his son. I said, Daddy boy is a spitting image of his daddy. That can be a good thing or a bad thing. I was talking about physical looks, but let's carry it on somewhere else. That can be a good thing or a bad thing. That if you so walk with Jesus and he walks with Jesus like he saw his daddy walk with Jesus, then you got the generational power that comes in. And then his seed. You won't raise up a generation that doesn't know God. My heart for you is not that you'll raise up a generation that can, you know, race a car or kill a deer or country boy can survive, you know, yeehaw and all of that stuff. That's great. I want you to raise a man's man, but only if he loves Jesus. And in that sense, I want him to look like his daddy. But you know what his daddy has to do? His daddy has to produce fruit without fail. Regardless of the circumstances. Regardless of the season. I'm not saying I don't want our kids to be successful in every arena. I want them to be successful in every arena. We prayed for the football players down here Sunday. Brett was down here praying for the football players. We had Harrison County, Bremen, and Mount Zion kids down here that we were laying hands and praying on these cats. And they're going to be knocking heads in a couple weeks playing each other. You know, the little quarterback from Harrison County was standing there, and Hunter, does Hunter play offense or defense? Both. Both. Hunter's going to be trying to ring his bell. But they're sitting down here. I want them all to be successful, but only is if they love Jesus and fall in love with Jesus and are generational in that thing. I hope Mary makes it to the Olympics in soccer. I really do. But not at the expense of losing her love for Jesus. That's the prize, guys. That's the prize. That's the prize. It's this generational thing. And the way that we do this is fruit. It does not fail. It's constant year round. And here's what they'll do is they'll come to that fruit because that fruit's sweet. I got a pear tree on the edge of my yard, and it's just like from here to Jeremy from the pasture fence. And we were leaving to come to church tonight, and we were pulling the truck by because I'd loaded up Scott's generator, and we were pulling off the basketball court right there. And I had three kids. Well, you could see them. Well, they was making a V line, and they came and they stopped, and they were looking longingly at that tree. And there was pears all over the ground, and they're like, so close yet so far. I wish somebody would feed me some of those pears because I can't get to them, but I sure do want them. But you know why? Because I go out there and I throw the pears that have fallen on the ground out there in the pasture, and the cows come up in them. And they knew that that was a source of fruit, so you know what they do? They come to it. They gravitate to it. And the world will come when we're producing fruit. You know what they won't come to? A Bradford pear tree. They don't give a rat's rear end about a Bradford pear tree. They don't. Y'all know what a Bradford pear is, don't you? We got some out here. They're pretty, but they're useless. They're pretty, but they're useless. They don't produce any fruit whatsoever. Those cows don't care anything about those. A deer don't care anything about that. But you get something that produces fruit, and you know what they'll do? They will gravitate to it, and they will come to it because they know it's got fruit that's going to impact their life. And so I look at this, and I see this as fruit without fail. Now, I want to touch, just let me loop right back and touch base on one thing, in that idolatry thing, because y'all kind of was like, well, I don't know about that, brother. I can tell that upset you somewhat when we're talking about that. Anything that comes in and displaces me from right relationship with God is an idol. I'm not saying forsake my wife. I love my wife. You know, I'm going to honor her and I'm going to bless her and I'm going to do everything. But if she takes me out of right relationship with God, you know what she should do? She should help position me in right relationship with God. Every single person in here, that's what y'all need to look for. Y'all hear me? Somebody that's going to undergird you in right alignment, proper alignment with the Father. I said, all you single guys, I don't care what she looks like. I don't care how hot she is. Most of them that are smoking hot that you went to high school, when you see them when they're 40, you're like, ooh wee. Most of them I went to high school with, and I see them now, I'm like, woo, I'm glad I married my wife. I ain't lying. So if we base it on that aspect, you more than likely going to be sorely disappointed. Can I get an amen? That's right. But it better be, but these things that are good, we can even do it with church activity. Church activity can become an idol to us. It can become an idol to us. I nearly messed up this afternoon and nearly not stopped and talked to my neighbor for just a minute because I was in a hurry to what? Get to church. I got to get there 15 minutes early because I got to anoint myself with oil and all of that stuff and get all slathered up so I can come out here and be anointed to release life into y'all. That's my routine. I'll get in that side room. I'll get to slinging oil in there and all that stuff, you know. And on Sunday morning, all these musicians, I get slinging oil on them and all of this stuff, you know. And they done learned, all the musicians, they turn their hands over because I don't need no oil all over my fingers and all that stuff. But what was the right thing for me to do? Stop and spend 10 minutes. And if it had got to the point to where it was like, let's just have some throwdown ministry right here, you know what I should have been able to do? I should have been able to text Brett or Jeremy and say, hey guys, I'm in the middle of some kingdom stuff right now. Y'all just run with it on Bible study. And you know what? That would have been the right thing. That's producing 12 types of fruit. How many of us are one-dimensional in our fruit? A lot of times we are. A lot of times we are. A lot of times we're one-dimensional. What time is it, somebody? Well, I got a couple more minutes. 5:10. Okay. The last time we went to revival up at South Carolina, up at Damon's Church, and Aaliyah. It was in June, and Aaliyah and the girls went with us, Aaliyah and Errol and the grandkids went with us. And, you know, we came in and we were down, and it was good services and, you know, worship was awesome and all of that and everything. And then Damon preached for like 3 hours. And, you know, Lori was out trying to tend to 4 babies in the back and around and all that stuff. And she said, if I'd had a paintball gun, I'd have shot you in the back of the head. Because she is out there tending with all the, you know, you got four and under. And she said, you know, I looked down there and you were standing up. On the second row. She said, you down there, stand up, second row. You was producing fruit. But in her mind, it was the wrong variety of fruit. I was producing almonds and I really needed to be producing cashews. So what I'm saying, we've got to be fruit producers 12 months a year. But not only that, there has to be the right variety of fruit. Because there may be things that she needs you to minister to her in, but then at the same time you've got kids that you need to minister. And then Cheyenne's going to need a different type of ministry because she's a teenage girl than Brandon is. And Brandon's going to need a different thing because Brandon needs to, you know, when I pull up and I see Brandon spiritually, not physically, but when I see him spiritually, I need to be able to say, hey, boy, he looks just like his daddy. There ain't a dime's worth of difference. And that thing goes on up the ladder because when I look at you, I ought to be able to say, he looks just like his daddy. See what we're talking about in this? So you better be able to produce a different kind of fruit for Brandon than you produce for Cheyenne, or a different kind of fruit for your mother than you produce for Cheyenne or Brandon or the younger kids. You'll see what everybody catching on what we're talking about tonight. This is significant, guys. This is significant, all right? Well, let's stand to our feet. I'm going to quit on time tonight. Shock the world. Jeremy said he's going to preach for 2.5 hours Sunday morning, so I'm going to let y'all be rested up for him. Amen. Hey guys, let me encourage y'all in something. You can do this. I'm speaking to every person in here. You can do this. You're a single dad with 5 kids. I thought that was right on that. You're a single dad with 5 kids. You can do this. You're a single dad. You can do this. I'm a super busy grandfather. I can do this. I can run a business and run a farm and pasture. I can do this and produce fruit in all seasons. I don't have to have withered leaf. I don't have to be a Bradford pear. We can do this. Grant, you're going to a totally different culture in a few months. I know you're about to engage in the team training and all of that stuff. You've been to Africa, to Kenya, but you haven't been to Dubai. You haven't been to the Middle East. I know you've been to Ethiopia short term, but even in Dubai, it's going to be a totally different culture. And there are going to be days where you're like, man, I just don't get all of this. But you can do this. You can do this. Brad, I know you're juggling your brains out right now, brother. I know you are. I've been there, and I've been in those seasons. And you're just trying to, I know you've got a pure heart, and you're like, man, I just want to do the right thing and make the right decisions. And it's hard. You can do this. You can do this. You can be a great dad. You can be a great man of God. You can be the generational legacy that your children follow in after, and Trevor's walking right beside you, and I can say, he looks just like his daddy. And I can look at you, and I can say, he looks just like his daddy. I want to encourage y'all tonight. You can do this. I promise you, you can. We can. You guys can, man. I know there'll be times, y'all are going through a program right now, and I know the society says, man, you screwed up bad. You can come out of this and you can flourish and you can so connect with God right now in your relationship. You can find out who you are and get solidified in who you are. And man, you can come out of this and you can be the most awesome father. You can be the most awesome husband. You can start, man, you might be from a generation that there is no spiritual generational legacy for you. You know, your dad might have been MIA. You may not even know who your dad is. There may be nobody in your family tree that's chased after God, but it can start with you. And in one day, remember what I said a while ago? In a 40-year span, there was four generations that were chasing after God in our family. You can be on the front end of that 40-year span. And in that 40-year span can be four generations. That's powerful. That's powerful. So let's believe and let's be confident, you know, that our God, who saved us and redeemed us, has so positioned us for success. He so positioned us for fruitfulness. He so positioned us for life. And not just life for us. Y'all thought I was going to say more abundant life. Not just life for us, but He's positioned us to release life into everything that we touch. Everything that we touch. Everything we touch. So let's do that and let's be that. Amen. I encourage you, if you need to come down and pray, come down and pray.